Welcome to the Supercoach Champions podcast with your hosts, Wilfred Z, Joe Fitz, and other Supercoach champions.
Supercoach Champions podcast. You're here with Catfish again, flying solo for another week. Good news is I'll definitely have company next week, so yeah, hang out for that. In any case, round two, obviously Joe Fitz and I went through a lot of stuff yesterday. Hopefully that was helpful. And today, again, as always, we're going to crunch some numbers. We're also going to look at some captaincy options and then talk some strategy. In particular, kind of just seeing, I know it's only been one round, but kind of seeing based on the trends scoring-wise, just seeing whether the thoughts we had in the preseason about which positions to target or to go light on, whether that was legitimate or not, and also spending a bit of time just thinking about where we should concentrate our trades for the next couple of weeks, especially obviously this round. So yeah, plenty to chat about. I'll jump straight into it. We're going to start by crunching some numbers.
Let me clue you in. We need a numbers guy. Get Wilfred.
All right, thanks again to our good friend Carl McGrath Accountant for sponsoring this segment, Crunching the Numbers. If you want to make sure you're not fudging your numbers when it comes to your taxes, get Carl to help you out. So yeah, for this week, what I really wanted to focus on was base and base attack. BBA, base plus power, whatever you want to call it. And for the sake of clarity, again, when I talk about base, I'm talking about tackles, less missed tackles, and also the hit-ups. And then base and base attack is your tackle plus an offload. So for me, I call it base and base attack, or BBA for short. That's how I look at the floor for a lot of players, because things like tackle bus and offloads, they're generally repeatable, or you know, they're reflective of someone's work rate and how efficient and effective they're being with their opportunities with the ball. So for example, someone like Latrell, who may not make as many runs as some of the other fullbacks, he loves to bust tackles and he can offload as well. And because he is more efficient with his runs, you know, if he makes a run, he may bust more tackles per run than other players. So I feel like it needs to be reflected in that. For example, you know, someone like a Bryce Cartwright, who has the ability to offload and is actively looking for it a lot, that becomes far more repeatable than someone who, you know, isn't really noted as an offloader and doesn't throw them too often. But, you know, Cardi makes up for maybe having less tackles or runs than some other edge back rowers because he's got that ability to throw the, you know, 2 to 4 point play with the effective or sometimes ineffective offload. So that's why I do look at the numbers together a lot of the times. I know some people look at just the raw or pure base, whatever you want to call it. But to me, it makes more sense to factor those base attack numbers in as well. Now, obviously, from position to position, you know, judging by what is a base stat or a base attack number, it will vary what your floor kind of wants, what you want it to be. For example, at hooker, you know, anything over 50 is already elite, 50 points per game in base and base attack. Majority of the hookers are sitting around the 40 to 45, and it's usually just being Harry Grant and Damien Cook that will get you over the 50 mark. And sometimes even higher when Cookie had his best year and even when Grant had his best year. So, yeah, that's the mark I'm always looking for hookers. At front row forward and second row forward, obviously that does vary a little bit as well. For example, middle forwards, you know, front row forwards and locks, you want at least 60. I think that's where I would often benchmark the elite kind of tier, or unless you've got like a Payne Haas who often hit 70 or close to 70 in base and base attack most weeks. And then you've got edge back rowers. So these are the guys where there's attacking upside, like Olakuatu, you know, those types of guys where if you can hit 60 as an edge back rower in base and base attack and also have the upside of, you know, potentially scoring tries and things like that, then that's what I would class as the elite tier. As for the halves, I mean, this is really hard because often halves, you know, get boosted with goal kicking as a floor or, you know, forced dropouts as being a fairly repeatable stat. Although I guess this year, who knows, right? Because I think we're seeing already there's less and less incentive to do forced dropouts since they don't really result in teams getting the ball back. But Yeah, usually if you've got a half, like say Dylan Brown, he's a good example of an elite elite floor at, in the halves. He often will get 40 plus in base and base attack, which is really, really good. So that's kind of my mark. Anything over 35 is actually quite decent. So that's where I think Cleary and Hines often sit around there as well without their goal kicking. So that's why, again, they're very elite in that tier. At center wing, often 50 is my cutoff. And honestly, anything above 40 to 45 is pretty good. But 50 has been usually where that's like top four center wing type areas. And that's without, you know, stuff like goal kicking or things like that. So that's the mark I'm often looking for. And that's like across the season. So I get some players will have little spurts where they'll have that. And that's great. But yeah, being able to maintain it across the season is a key indicator as well. And obviously at center wing, you need to factor in some attacking upside too. So it's no good if they're just banging out 50 in base and base attack each week, but they never score any tries because, yeah, they're just not in a good attacking team or whatever. So that's also something to be considered. And I'm looking at Jacob Kras as a clear example of that, basically. But yeah, again, we'll come to that. And fullback, I think similar to center wing, honestly. Anything above 40 to 45 is solid. 50 plus is definitely elite. And I think that's where, you know, someone like a Turbo can definitely be considered elite because he often did hit that 50 mark in base and base attack when obviously fully healthy and, you know, playing as well as he can play. So I guess that offers a bit of a guide to what I look for generally in those various positions in terms of base and base attack. So I just thought I'd look at round one in particular. And right now our leaders in base and base attack for the season is so far Olakuatu with 72. And that's 72 out of his 97. Points that he scored in round one was just from, again, tackles, less missed tackles, runs, tackle busts, and offloads. That is, you know, like I said, you want 60 plus from edge backer or Olakuatu, elite already. Painhaar 71, which literally his entire score of 71 was base and base attack. So yeah, that floor is unmatched at front row forward, basically. Isaiah Yeo with a 69 in base and base attack, and then he actually scored 67, so he actually lost some points from, I would assume, an error or a penalty. And then Bryce Cartwright, 68. So keeping in mind, obviously, he had a very, very nice six offloads, which, you know, to be clear, if you're not aware, offloads can offer 4 points per offload if they're effective, and that's 24 points right there in offloads for Cardi. So, yeah, obviously his base, not as elite, because that would have been around about 44 in base, like the pure base, but when you add in the upside of those offloads, it's, yeah, very, very impressive. So, yeah, that's Cardi. And then Tohu Harris was the fifth highest at 68. So, look, you can keep going down. There's a heap of other 60s in there, but I guess in terms of the top 25 so far this season, so, you know, pretty much all of them except for four players are all, like, a forward of some sort. And that's not surprising, right? So, I wanted to highlight these four that weren't forwards and still made the top 25. So starting off with Talon May. So he scored 57 in base and base attack, and he scored 67 overall. So the only thing missing from his numbers was he had a hit out line break there. So everything else was just pure work rate and tackle bust, and he obviously looked really, really good. I mean, 9 tackle busts is probably not sustainable each week, but it's you know, it's a great sign. And you'd think he's going to get some attack soon as well. So Talon May, very, very impressive. Dane Gagai, 56 for his score. He scored 58 in base and base attack. So, you know, 36 points just in runs, and then add in 10 points, which is 5 tackle busts and a bunch of tackles since he gets to be center. Yeah, he's obviously really, really good there. And then the next two names, obviously, you know, Zach Lomax is a very, very popular name. He's scored 108, and of that 108, 59 came from his base and base attack. So obviously, firstly, he's got 37 points just in runs, and then he's got 20 points in tackle bust. So that's 10 tackle busts that he had, and only 2 tackles. But obviously, he's not a center anymore, so he is a winger, and they don't get as many tackles, which makes sense, right? The other thing that you can throw in there for Lomax is he's obviously goal kicking, and as the Dragons attack, I mean, it looked pretty good. And I'm trying not to get too carried away because obviously they were playing one of the weaker defensive teams in the comp. But, you know, 14 points net, so 16 points in goals, and he missed one, so that's negative 2. If he kicked 100%, he would have scored 20 points in goals. But, yeah, 14 points net is pretty good from 108. So for him to be able to ton up with just one try and two line breaks and everything else is just, I guess, a fairly standard floor that you're going to expect, it just shows that he's a real, real smoky to be a top four center wing. Obviously, there's a few things that has to keep up. And those run numbers, I guess across the season, you probably don't expect that. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's going to be able to hit a 45 to 50 points per game per week with his work rate. And then you throw in the extra, 10, 15 points in goal kicks each week. That's a really, really awesome floor. And then obviously, because he's a winger, he's going to jag the odd try. Yeah, Lomax is really, really good pick at this stage. But obviously, we still need to rely upon the Dragons being relevant. And yeah, I guess for me, something that it's narrative based, but there's all this constant chat about him being unhappy being on the wing. He's, agitating for a release. He wants to go to the Eels. Like, there's all sorts of chat. It could all be BS. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to overreact to it, but it does make me a little bit hesitant that I want to maybe give him one more week before I jump on. But I certainly couldn't blame anyone for, reacting to these numbers as his first game on the wing. And, I mean, technically he hit very similar work rates and numbers in the trial, in the final trial as well. So that's also something that needs to be acknowledged there. But I guess first, official game this year where he's put up these numbers, I think that's why I guess it's okay to wait another week and see if anything changes there. But I guess, for example, again, speculation, but if he does go to the Eels, right, he's playing center. He's not playing wing there. There's no chance he would switch to the Eels just to play on the wing when he's apparently unhappy about playing on the wing here. But who knows? If he scores a couple more tries, he might end up deciding he does like to play on the wing and score tries. And the last name, Joey Manu. He scored 62 points of his 106 points in base and base attack. I mean, yeah, it's Joey Manu. He showed us exactly why he's been a top center wing option for multiple seasons now. And it's not just because he gets to play fullback every now and then or 5/8 every now and then. Even when he's at right center alone, he just gets to do what he does. And yeah, it looked good. And obviously with Dom Young joining him soon, there'll definitely be opportunities, I think, where, Manu creates a half chance and Dom Young's good enough to finish it off. And that'll benefit, obviously, both of them with try line break assist, whatever kind of opportunities. So yeah, arguably Manu is another great shout. And I couldn't fault anyone for going with him as an option since he's not exactly highly owned at this stage. But guess for Lomax being a little bit cheaper could be a bit more tempting. Anyway, I think that'll do us for number crunching for this week. So get in touch with Carl as tax time is not quite here yet, but it's not too far away. So no harm in getting ahead of the game there. So get Carl to do your tax return. He'll legally maximize your tax refund. So whether it's just a basic tax return or accounting for things like rental properties, capital gains on share trading, even crypto, Carl can help you out and record everything correctly. And, Carl is a small business owner, so you'll be speaking directly with him, who's going to do all your work. There's no work done overseas or by junior staff. It's all Carl. And because, again, he's a small business, so he has very few overheads, so he can pass on the savings to his clients. So, yeah, definitely get in touch with Carl. You can find him on all the social media, Carl McGrath, and that's MCGRATH, first name CARL, accountant. And, yeah, if you can't find him for whatever reason, get in touch with us and we'll make the connection for you as well.
Look, man, I only need to know one thing.
Who the hell is this guy?
You and the chosen one!
You think I had a choice?
This is your captain speaking.
All right, thanks again to Ross and Chamberlain for the new drop. That's obviously our transition to our captaincy chat. And yeah, look, I'll put up my hand and admit round one certainly didn't go the way I expected. Although, I was highest on Ponga and in the end he wasn't too bad as a captaincy pick. So I'll take that. Look, I'm expecting a lot of these premium guys to bounce back. So I'm going to stick with them. They proved over the course of a season or multiple seasons that they can get it done for Supercoach. So everyone's got a low game in them every now and then. So yeah. All right, so the way that this week's games are set up, I think there's some clear standouts for vice captaincy and also potentially captaincy if you wanted to get out of the way. Obviously, with the Broncos and Rabbitohs playing first game on a Thursday night, I know we get a little bit antsy sometimes with the Thursday night game. It might be a little bit wet or it's a bit dewy or whatever, but yeah, Reece Walsh and also Latrell Mitchell, clear standout options there. They've both got the ceiling to be able to hit a high enough score for it to be loopable at this stage of the season, so definitely in the mix there. And look, I'm going to put Nico Hines there. First game on Friday at points bet, I think against the Bulldogs, he has to be at least a blue armband or potentially a orange armband if you want to be straight there. Next game after that is obviously the Panthers at home against the Eels with, you know, potentially a banged up Mitch Moses who's not going to be as effective as he normally might be. So again, very tempting to be able to straight captain Cleary, or again, if you get the right setup with Nuffs and all that type of stuff, you might be able to do vice captaincy for either Hines or Cleary as well. But it's clear standout options there. Otherwise, I think if you're going to look a little bit later in the round, I mean, look, I would go back to the Ponga well. With a 50 with, you know, only one significant kind of attacking stat, and wasn't even a try assist or a try. I think there's definitely that ceiling there. He's going to have Kai Pierce-Paul running off his hip, which I know when, you know, you have an attacking weapon, like he used to have Lockie Fitz, and constantly put him through for attacking stats. And I really do like that left edge. I mean, you know, Kai Pierce-Paul, Bradman Best, and obviously Greg Marju going up against Chad Townsend, Jeremiah Nanai, Zach Laybutt, and then obviously Kyle Felt. I know Laybutt looks really promising, but he's still a, you know, 5-6 game rookie. He's not really had the opportunity to go up against the superstar like Kalen Ponga too often. So I think that'll be enticing for Ponga. Like, we know Kyle Felt is susceptible in defense, and that Townsend-Nanai combo is still an ongoing concern for me. I know Nanai was pretty good last week, but at the same time, the Dolphins' left edge, really, they barely fired a shot, and I think that was partially because there was an injury there for Lemuelu, and then, yeah, it just wasn't a good game for them, full stop. And, yeah, I definitely think that left edge for the Knights is going to be firing this week, so I have a lot of confidence in Ponga if you wanted to go that way as well. If you wanted to look at, obviously, the other key options, you've got your Turbo and Teddy kind of combos. I think they genuinely are options later in the round, both playing obviously on Sunday. There is some chat about maybe it being a wet weather game, so maybe keep an eye on that. But if it's not wet, I mean, Sunday afternoon at Four Pines Park is going to be a good place for Turbo to rack up a score, and Teddy as well if the Roosters are legit. I guess if you wanted to get a little bit riskier, I'll throw Drinkwater out there in the same game against, obviously, the same, you know, instead of Ponga, you go Drinky. He's definitely an option there. And then, you know, Manu, Teddy, and the real, I guess, real big balls kind of pod captain would be someone like a Zach Lomax, final game of the round against the Dolphins. And it is away, away for Lomax, so at the Dolphins' home stadium in Redcliffe. But yeah, if the Dolphins defend like they did last week, I think there's going to be points on offer. I know they're going to have a new left edge. Tessie's been dropped, so it's going to be Avarillo, but it's a new combo with Bostock. And, you know, look, Laybutt went to town. Nanai scored a try, and then Kyle Felt got one as well. So you'd think there's some potential attacking stat there for Lomax. And then if he showcases that floor again, he's going to go 100-plus as well. So, yeah, obviously, big balls move, but I can definitely see it as a viable one. But I guess for me, I'm looking, you know, it could be a simple, like, straight captain on Kynes. And then, yeah, I don't worry about looping. I'll, you know, maybe VC one of the Broncos players or whatever. I think, yeah, otherwise it'll be VC Hines and then Captain Ponga again. But yet to decide. It'll be one of those combos, though. So.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
All right, so strategy chat time. Like I said before, I wanted to look at probably a couple of key things here. One is, you know, let's focus again. What's the priority for our trades in round two and round three particularly? Look, I'll keep it simple. Cash generation. You got to get the right cheapies in. And that's why one of my trades most likely this week is Farmacilli to Liam Henry, because I think, you know, despite the green dot, Farmacilli is a dud. He's just not going to get the minutes, unfortunately. And Liam Henry looks like he's got a very secure role. I'd like the bench for him with Garner and Edgeback Roar on there. I know Garner might have played some middle, or they could easily rotate Sorensen or Martin to the middle if Garner goes onto the edge. But yeah, I think it looks like Liam Henry might have the Lindsay Smith role from last year, and Smith made some nice cash. So I feel pretty confident in him. You know, ideally, I'd like to get another look at minutes, but I think I might have enough trades that I need to make next week. So I'm going to keep that. Get that one, go early on that one to make it happen. So yeah, that's that's where I'm at. Otherwise, I'd be trying to focus on fixing up any failed cheapies that I took a punt on. For example, if you, you know, went with Kotrick and obviously you lost that bet against Savage versus Kotrick, then you might want to go from Kotrick to some other cheapie or whatever. So those are the moves I'd be making there. Now, round three is where I'm going to want to prepare to make sure I've got some cash ready to go. And that's where, you know, you're swapping from mid-ranger to mid-ranger potentially if you think you've gone for the wrong mid-ranger, or potentially if you've got some failed guns who are going to potentially bleed heaps of cash, it might be an opportunity to do some, you know, 1 or 2 week flips. Having buyers in between might help. So, look, I'm not saying I'm locked into this, but I have toyed with the idea of a Harry Grant out in round three. If he fails again, and when I say fail, I'm talking like a sub 40 score this week. If he goes another 50, I'll probably not make that move. But like, if he fails again and he drops, you know, potentially drops a fair bit of cash in round three, he's got the round four buy as well. So I can see myself maybe if, you know, there's a good moneymaker at hooker that's going to free up a bunch of cash that I could use for 2 weeks temporarily and make some cash over the next 2 weeks. So like hypothetically, if Joey Lussick scores 80 plus this week, he's going to make a, you know, a nice chunk of cash over the rounds three and four. So I could see myself maybe going Grant to Lussick for 2 weeks. I've got Cheese, so I can still have a second hooker who's still going to give me decent points, I think, fairly safely. But if that happens, yeah, I could make that flip and then use that cash for Grant in rounds three and four to upgrade elsewhere. And then, yeah, obviously bring Grant back in as soon as I can after that buy. That's something you might be able to do in round three, if not necessarily Grant, just some other guns. But those would be the type of trades I've been looking at in round three. And then round four, kind of similar, you know, again, swapping guns, swapping mid-rangers to maximize your points and cash-making generation. But round two, I wouldn't be making any knee-jerk reactions like ditching a premium gun. And like I said before, you know, these guys like your Nikos and Clearys and all of those types of guys, you know, they're at that high price because for a whole season they kept it up and they were able to, you know, return the average they ended up being priced at for round one. So I wouldn't be reacting to a low score in round one. Again, that low score is only in there for 1 week. So if Nico goes back-to-back 90s, he may still lose cash in round three, but he'll suddenly go back up real soon. So, you know, trying to cash in on his low score in round one is not going to really pay off much. Now, if he drops another sub-30 score this week, then different conversation. There could be a legitimate plan to, you know, flip Nico. But again, it's going to be fraught with danger because Nico can bang out 150 plus any time he feels like. But yeah, that's kind of my thought process on what I'll be focusing my trades on over the next 2 weeks in particular. The next thing I wanted to talk about was looking at what areas and specific positions in Supercoach. Again, we talked about in the preseason where I thought the opportunities would lie. And yeah, I think what we've seen so far, and I know it's only round one, but we're definitely seeing so far we were mostly right to fade that second row position and go with the mid-rangers there. The reason being is that, you know, aside from Olakuatu and Nanai to an extent, but even you could argue Nanai was already kind of bordering on the more expensive kind of mid-ranger area, a lot of the other options in that position, just, you know, the premium guns, for example, just didn't really go that well. And the ones who did were all like sub 5%. Ownership, aside from, yeah, Olakuatu was 7.7%. You know, top scoring player was Bryce Cartwright at 2.7%. You got Hosking, who's a very short-term rental at 1.4%. Nanai, 4.8%. And then you got guys like Fatala Mariner, RFM, who is 0.8%, but he's, you know, back to the bench already. Radley's 1.5%, but, you know, really benefited from injuries and also got an attacking stat towards the end that he wouldn't have gotten it. That was Sua Wong's. A little bit bitter about that, but anyway. But yeah, he's not playing 80 minutes again. Josh Kerr, again, line break try, and obviously 1.5%. Tyson Frizzell, 2.2%. Yeah, the most highly owned player in 2RF, who most of us have in center wing, was Burbo, 59.2%, scored the 72. And that was better than Isaiah Yeotel, who Harris, Elisa Katoa, who I really liked, but 1.7%, only scored 66 as well. So I think that just really highlights that it was probably the area to fade, and you can argue that there's opportunities now to jump on these pods and get a leg up, but obviously that depends on you having nailed the other areas of your team. I guess this is where I'm going to say, like, I know a lot of people are overreacting to how poorly the scores went in round one for a lot of people, and that's because the most popular guys didn't go very well, like Cleary and Nico and Ponga and all of the above. And generally speaking, the ones who have gone well, not that many people have them, right? And, you know, they would have had to sacrifice in other positions to be able to afford them. So let's not overreact at this stage. The premiums are going to get the job done. So if they're getting these highly, you know, high scoring guys from round one, maybe they've got their team loaded up with like a Val Holmes and Garrick and you know, Lomax as well. That's a lot of money spent at center wing, and maybe you could argue that's the strategy that you want to go with for this year. But in order to afford that, they've probably cheaped out massively at front row forward, and they've maybe got a Lenny and Arrow problem to fix this week. Maybe they've got, you know, only one of Nico and Cleary and only one gun fullback or something like that. Like, there's going to be problems that they need to fix. And at the moment, you know, Nico or Cleary goes bang, the little edge that they got from having the gun center wing combo, all of a sudden they just is clawed back in the space of, you know, one or two rounds. Or if it's a massive captaincy, you know, 150 plus score, that you know, edge that they've gotten and being able to roll out Val Holmes for 108 and Lomax for 108 and, you know, Garrick for a 99 in round one is suddenly clawed back just because, let's say, they've gone with, you know, Luke Brooks or something. I don't know who else they might have halfback instead of, you know, Nico or Cleary. But the guy that they're missing there only scores 50, and then you've got a captaincy option of who might be able to go 150 plus, and you can double that as a captain. So, yeah, I guess that's where there is the risk that they're running by skipping those premiums to be able to afford the other guys. But, yeah, at this early stage of the season, I wouldn't panic at all. I wouldn't overreact. And, you know, again, those premiums were those prices because they kept it up for a whole season, or like for a Nico, you know, multiple seasons, Cleary, multiple seasons. Like, I wouldn't panic is what I would say there. Lastly, at front row forward, I know there's a lot of stress about that position, and understandably, a lot of people jumping on Terrell May. Again, I totally understand that. And I would, you know, if I had Arrow, if I had Lenieux, and, you know, I don't have anybody else I can roll out in their stead, like, Terrell May is the guy I would go to within, who's within reaching distance of an Arrow. I mean, downgrade from Arrow to May, and Lenny, you just got to find 100 grand to be able to make that trade. So that's where I'd be looking. Outside of that, I don't see, you know, I know a lot of people jumping on Flegler, but that's a problem that you'll have to solve again next week because he's not going to be playing. So one thing we've seen from front row forward is that the premiums are absolutely getting it done already. And you can tell that there's going to be potentially a real gap with maybe only one or two mid-range options who might claw that gap in. I mean, Fenua Blake, Payne Haas, Tino, you know, three of the top five front row forwards already. And you got Tapani not too far back. So, like, these are perennial top options. And there's a real argument to suggest, you know, you might be actually better off just finding a way to get up to one of them, locking them away for the season, and you don't have to worry. So I think, yeah, obviously, if you wanted to do that strategy, someone like a Fenua Blake or a Tarpane could be really beneficial since they don't have to deal with Origin. Or you could say Tino may be a good choice because he's now, you know, after this week, obviously he'll be done with one of his three buys across the year. And he's also got dual positions. So there's some arguments there, and I think, you know, contrary to a lot of popular beliefs that front row forward can't hurt you, I think those people are currently the ones dealing with Arrow and Lenieux and a lot of those dramas in that front row forward position. So, yeah, I'm not without risk, obviously. I've taken a punt on Tola. I know I could easily be making that swap to May instead or whatever, but I also locked down Payne Haas, so I've got that certainty already in my other front row forward spot. So it's, yeah, one less headache I have to worry about, but... yeah. Anyway, I think that's enough chat for this week. Like I said, I'm likely captaining either Hines straight up or VC Hines, and I'll probably captain Ponga as my other option. As for my trades, I've pretty much locked in Farmacilli to Henry, and it's just a matter, I could just sit on that one trade. I am tempted to, you know, I mentioned skipping Talon May, and I think after watching him, I don't think I will enjoy Supercoach this year if I don't have him in my team sooner rather than later, especially when he's in like 43-44% of other super coaches' teams. So for me, the problem is if I want to make that in one trade, I've got to give up Sewell Wong, basically, of the players I would be willing to part with. And, you know, you could argue it's a mid-ranger to mid-ranger, but there's every chance that Taylor May could match Sua Wong's based attack stats. And obviously being, you know, left center for the Panthers is probably a much more desirable position than being a potential 50-60 minute edge back rower for the Roosters, who might not be locked in to minutes every single week. So I'm not saying Wong's going to go poorly, but he might just plod away for a 50-55 average if he's not, you know, injured or whatever. And Talon could hit that just in base and base attack without his attacking stats. So, yeah, consideration for me there. But anyway, I think we'll finish up here for today. Thanks again for listening. Obviously, yeah, shout out again to patreon.com/supercoachchampions. Would love to have you become a champ and obviously support us separately there. But, you know, we do offer other stuff in the Champs Discord. We've got review podcasts and, you know, you'll have myself in particular answering your questions all the time. As a priority as well. I know, again, I do get to questions from other people, but the champs always come first. So if you want to make sure that you get priority answers, then jump in the champs Discord, patreon.com/supercoachchampions. But thanks again for listening. We'll catch you again next week.